Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
All right, it's still Spirit of Nigeria Radio, and I hope you've been enjoying all the beautiful pieces of music we've been giving you. And of course, that's courtesy of DJ Timson. 6 p.m. Nigeria time, time for Real Talk with Lola. And of course, we know Lola is Lola Bade Aluko, a Nigerian psychologist based in South Africa who keeps us abreast and teaches us how to cope with living abroad. This month, we've been talking about trauma, the myth, the truth, and beyond. And this is the final edition in that series. And I'm sure she's got a very great guest on the line for us. Lola, good evening. How are you?
I'm doing great. And yes, it's another end of the month. Like they say, you leave the best for the last.
All right.
And in the write-up, I said, what a nice way to wrap up my topic, because I mean, like I said, we're like Bola said, we're trying to reach out people in the diaspora, and this traumatic incident has to do with the diaspora. Funny enough, yeah, it has to do with the diaspora.
All right, so let's meet your guest.
Yeah, I think it will be a big learning curve for most of we Nigerians in the diaspora to learn how to handle issues when they do arise. My guest is Bola Nelson Essien, and known as Salt.
I was wondering about the salt part. I'm curious about the salt part.
Yeah, she will tell us about the salt part. So over to you, Bola. Can we just briefly know about you?
Thank you. Thank you so much, Lola. I don't think I've gotten the name of your co-host, so I'd love to refer to him by name. Please, what's your name, sir?
My name is Toye Arulogun, but people call me Aru. A-R-U, just, that's it.
A-R-U, okay. Aru, nice to meet you. And thank you both for having me on your show today. I was thinking about it, you know, and I was like, this is gonna be kind of like a litmus test, if you like, to see how far I have healed on this journey. So let's see how it goes. So like Lola has says, I mean, if you check my birth certificate, the names you will see there would be Abimbola Adefolalu, and then if you check my marriage certificate, you see that changing into Estienne Nelson. So my name is Abimbola Estienne Nelson, but I prefer to be called Salt. I believe I'm God's salt. I'm his errand girl. I'm here to basically use my voice any way he sends me. But the ultimate goal is to draw people towards him and his love. Because for me, that's the solution to all the issues that we deal with in life. Once you can tap into God and his love, then the rest is Jara, as they say. I am 52 years old. I'm a wife. I have 3 children. I have 2 brothers. And I have 3 sisters. I love to write. I love communicating, as you can tell. I love to laugh. I love to cry. I love food, you know. And I think, in a nutshell, that's just who I am. That's why I'm on this show today, just to use my voice as a channel, you know, to draw people towards God through my own journey of healing with this specific case. I hope that kind of gives everybody a little insight into who I am.
Okay, so you love food.
I love food.
I think we have something in common. That's why you married a Calabar or Akwa Ibom man. Is that correct?
And you know they have the best food, right?
You see, we can't get it wrong. That's why too, you know, this is exchange is no robbery. I'm a Yoruba man. I married an Akwa Ibom because of food. I didn't want to be conscripted to Ewedu Angbeguri for the rest of my life, so I decided to.
I think Bola, you're from Ekiti, right?
I am Ekiti by birth, Ibibio by marriage. You're correct.
Okay.
Yeah, don't worry. My husband is Ekiti. So I think the three of us have something in common. I'm married to Ekiti, man. And Aru happens to be my guarantor. He guarantees me my good behavior.
Yes. All right, let's go ahead.
So are you married to somebody from that side?
Yeah, from Akwa Ibom. Yeah.
Yes. She even has a cookbook about how to cook calabar portions.
She called it love portion. It's like the Calabar love portion. And I'm saying that I'm the one that the love portion cut. I'm the one the love portion cut. So.
Clearly she has cooked you very well. Those must be the secret they gave them in the partner room. She has.
Yes, yes, sir. If you check our website, that book is there somewhere on the website, on the Spirit of Nigeria Radio website.
Radio, yeah.
Okay. I'll look it up, Lola. I'll get the details from you.
All right, no problem.
Yes. So let's go straight into the program. It's a very funny story. I know that while I was in the diaspora, a link came up, which is how we linked up with Bola again. A link came up for me to lend my voice to some incident that happened in the diaspora to a Nigerian. And one of the reasons I joined then, not even knowing it was somebody I knew, was because I just felt, okay, you know what? This is actually an eye-opener for Nigerians in diaspora, for us to be able to, like, come together so that when there's a tragedy, we can always, you know, there's somebody that can actually give a voice for the voiceless, yeah. Not even knowing it was going to be you that it happened to. Because I felt, let me use the word, I felt so hurt and so, like, as if my country let me down, I felt betrayed. And I felt, okay, you know what, if there was a voice in the diaspora, you understand, maybe things wouldn't have happened the way it happened. But again, like you said, as a Christian, sometimes you just leave everything. But again, we need to be humans and put, like somebody said, we should borrow ourselves some sense sometimes and be able to say, okay, this has happened, but we should learn from it. And that is why I said, okay, Bola, you know what? Just give us an insight into your story. I know sorry, as a psychologist, I know sometimes you have to let things go so that you can do well. But again, sometimes you can swing it the other way, because by talking, you heal too.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, and that's why I started off by saying, like, I'm very happy for this opportunity, because it's going to help me to see how far, like, God has walked up my soul with regards to this matter, because at the end of the day, he's the only one that can really heal us from it. So for those who are listening, who don't know the background, it's even difficult to know to figure out what tenses to use. So I had a sister, Oluwashola Adefola Lugaska. And she was like my baby. She was like my first child. You know, our mom passed away when she was about 5, and I think I was about 18. So as you can imagine, I basically brought this child up, you know. And just when I figured out that, okay, fine, she's grown up, she's gone to school, she's married, she's settled, she's happy, you know, and I figured, okay, fine, my work is done. Thank you, Jesus, you know. So to this call from her husband, you know, telling me, you know, giving me the worst news I've ever received in my life. Mind you, I've lost both parents. So if this is the worst news, you know that, you know what it meant. And he's telling me that, oh, that Shirley was in some kind of accident. She fell down, you know, and she hurt her head or something. Basically telling me that Shirley had passed on. Guys, I honestly can't even recall what the world felt like in those moments from that 11:28 on that morning till the evening of that day. I don't know where I was. You know, my body was here on planet Earth, but I just don't know where I was, because I was like, what are you telling me? You know, each time I engaged with the husband, you know, it kept changing. You know, okay, now it wasn't that she fell and she hit her head. Now it was that, oh no, she was ill and they took her to the hospital. And you know, and I'm like, okay, fine, but why did it take you so long? If she was really ill, why did it take you so long to call me? I'm her sister, more or less like her mom. It's not like you don't have my number and everything. So that was where the nightmare began. At first, you know, ironically, I actually was feeling so sorry for the husband, because from my perspective, knowing her when she got married to this guy, he loved her. He loved her to bits. So I was actually worried for his own mental well-being at this point, that, oh my gosh, how is this guy feeling? How is he coping? Hope his people are standing by him. Well, as days went by, as the days turned to weeks and then to months, something wasn't gelling anymore. From him now all of a sudden being in such a hurry to bury her, you know I'm in Nigeria. You know I have to get a visa to come over there, pay my respects. You know we have family who are close to you in Europe. Give us time to come there, you know, and see her. And, you know, okay, fine, she's passed. We can't do anything about that, but give us time. And this gentleman was like, no, that he can't wait, that he's distraught, thinking about her in the mortuary, is giving him nightmares. I'm like, guy, this thing, you're not the only one who's lost somebody here. Yes, she's your wife, but we're her family. She didn't drop from the sky. This guy refused. Ladies and gentlemen, he says he cannot wait till that he's not only is he going to bury her, he's going to cremate her.
Cremate her, yeah.
And I'm like, what? Where is that even coming from? We don't do that. That's not our culture. He says, no, that's what, when him and Shirley were discussing it, that's what they agreed. And I was like, guy, what were people discussing that you entered the gist of cremation? You are both young. You're both moving, growing in life, trying to set up a family, building a home. So where did this discussion of if I die, cremate me come in? Anyway, okay, no problem. If you say my sister said that's what she wants to be done to her body, even this is a woman who told me everything, we talked about everything. She didn't mention it to me. No problem, but wait for me to get there. He refused. And on the 5th of January, note that this child died on the 28th of December. He couldn't wait. 5th of January, he cremated my sister. That was where I almost lost my mind. You know, just sitting here in Nigeria feeling so helpless that I couldn't stop anything. And in between all of this, we were talking to the embassies. We were calling. I didn't sleep. I was on the phone calling anybody who I knew I could call, old friends from secondary school, friends in the embassy, just trying to figure out who can we get that would stop this guy from doing this thing until we can get there. Anyway, a whole lot of things happened. At the end of the day, he cremated my sister and then he buried the ashes. You know, I don't even really understand. If you're going to cremate somebody, my understanding, at least from the small school that I went to, that means you want to keep the ashes close by because you want to know that person close to you. I had never heard before this time of anybody cremating anybody and then burying the ashes, you know. And he did that. He didn't even tell us. He didn't give us the dates for the burial. He didn't tell us anything. We're following the news from social media. Can you imagine? It's as if he felt that this girl had nobody, he could do whatever he wanted, he didn't have to ask anybody's permission or care about anybody's feelings. And you know, a whole lot of stuff happened in between. You know, when that was when I figured out that, you know what, something sinister had happened, you know. And I think it took from 2017 till September 2018, it took me that journey with God to let go of this matter and stop trying to pursue it, because I wrote petitions. Like Lola is saying, we had petitions on change.org. I wrote letters to every level of government in my country and in Poland. I petitioned everybody I knew to petition. And you know, the irony of it all, and that's why I agree with Lola when I said I felt hurt that my country had let me down. Because the irony of it all is that in all my petition writing, I petitioned the Nigerian government. I only copied the people on the Polish side, the president, the chief of police. They were the ones who actually responded to me in any way at all. The Nigerian side, till today, I've not heard pim from them. It was a Polish government who was now pursuing it, and they were getting in touch with me, and they were telling me what I needed to do, which I did. The documentation, you know, the Interpol in Nigeria got involved and all of that. But at the end of the day, the Polish government, the law, the court there said, look, yes, I've given them all the documentation that they're asking me for, but they can't take it from me. They need to take it from the Nigerian attorney of law. So I got all the documentation and forwarded it to them. They were like, yeah, these are copies. We acknowledge receipt from you, but we're dealing government to government here, and we can't take this information from you. And they waited. They forwarded to me letters written to the government asking them for this information. After about a year and whatever, I can't remember the timing, they told me they were closing the case. You know, having to deal with that. that, okay, here are these people, they were willing, even if it was Ojuaye, even if they were just posting me, or at least they showed that they had heard me. My government didn't. And I won't go into the details of the people in government that we were in touch with, who basically, at the end of it, basically almost washed me and my whole family, that while we were here and our daughter, we sent her to Poland to go and look for Oyibo, you know, and say, we now say our eyes have cleared, say we have seen what has happened. That was the response of somebody in government, you know, to me on this matter. And I won't name names because I said there's no point. So, but I had to walk through all of that, you know, just the hurt, the resentment, the bitterness against the government, against my sister's husband's family and all. And it was hurting me physically. It was impacting my health. It was impacting my relationships with people who are close to me and my family. And I just realized that, you know, the devil is trying to steal from me twice, and I will not allow it. And so I had to release myself to God to say, okay, Lord, I know you want me to let this thing go. Oh, yeah, here I am. You have to make it happen in me, because if not, I will pursue this thing till I die. So I had to release myself to God to do that for me. And eventually he did. And he took me through different stages of it, which we may touch or we may not touch here. But in a nutshell, that is a story of what happened to my sister in Poland. And till today, we do not know exactly what happened to her. I do not have the true story. But she's at peace. She's gone to rest. And I'm just grateful to God that through her story now, through what has happened to her, we're doing a lot of good things in her name, because I don't want my sister remembered for that story. I'd prefer for people to think about Shirley now and think about all the good work that her foundation is doing and how we're touching lives from it.
Oh. Mm. Wow. All right.
Lola. I know.
Yeah.
And that's not even the half of it. I haven't even really gone into details, you know, about the things, you know, how when we're asking the guy that, like, okay, since you won't let us get there before you cremate her, please send us a photo of her.
What,
and
yeah,
how he refused, you know, and how he said no. And I'm like, what do you mean no? What are you trying to hide? You know, I haven't told you about how he says, oh, well, I can't send you a full picture. I will send you a picture of her hand. I haven't told you that. I haven't told you about how he tried to take off all her social, he tried to erase her presence from the face of the earth. Took down all her
social. Yeah, and I remember, I remember reading that even the I think the medics something to do with performing a postmortem, and then it was all rubbish at the end of the day. It was like, because I remember I joined on the petition against his mom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I joined against the petition against his mom because I think there was a little bit of a cover up. If you ask
there
me,
was a, there was.
When I read the whole thing, because all of a sudden the medical doctor couldn't perform a postmortem on a dead body, which I found funny. I mean, they couldn't say the cause of death.
Why
would you
on.
Say a little cover up? It's a big one. It's not little.
It's a big cover up.
So many things happened, but why I use that term is this, okay? Like you rightly said, Bola. They were in love, from what I even saw. You could see she was very happy in her marriage and everything, even though we never knew what was underneath.
Yeah.
I believe, and that is where I'm going to, I believe, you know, sitting on the fence and looking inwards now, I believe there was abuse going on.
Yeah.
One way or the other.
No, I'm convinced of that, but what I don't know and I've left to God is this is what I think. Let me just be honest. I think the husband was a real mama's boy, and what I've come to understand was that Shola is African now. This guy is Polish. I've found out later that the level of racism that goes on in these European blocks is way beyond what I clearly understood. I did not know this. And even though I understand, had come to accept Shirley, clearly nothing was as we thought.
Okay.
I remember reading comments in the Polish media then, because I used to follow all the media around the story and all, and you read the comments from Polish people who would say, why are people surprised? You know, that this guy's mom would never have allowed this guy have a child with this lady. because that would have just been to the taking the whole thing to the limit. Yeah, marry, that's fine. But when I start to have children, and I found it very strange because the truth was that that was the next level of where they were taking their relationship to. They had been married for some time. They were now about to build a home. They were moving out. And the next step was to have a child. I think at that point, I mean, the woman never agreed to defend herself. Nobody agreed to defend themselves. What I understand is that then this was now taking it too far. First of all, you have taken my husband, my son away from me. Or at least you're still living in the home with us. But now you mean you want to leave this home, take my son, and then you're going to go and have a child with the son that will be mixed. These are comments from the people in Poland. So it was me now understanding that this was deeper than I even thought. And when you look at the story, when you look at Shirley's history with her husband, I didn't think the issue was from the husband, but clearly the husband was still under the control of his mom. So and I know, and between me and Shirley, because she was my sister, she told me everything. She used to always tell me how the mom, at first, she was very sweet and all, but the whole controlling and want to be all up in their business was becoming a bit too much for her. You know, Africa, we were African women, we want to do our things ourselves. We want to take care of our husbands ourselves. So when you have a mother-in-law who wants to be everything to you, because she used to be everything to her son, it's not going to go down well with you. And so there was friction between her and the mother-in-law. Because she was like, look, this guy is my husband. You don't have to wash his laundry anymore. I can do his laundry. I can cook his food. Yeah, we're in the same home. Please, there's boundaries. She wasn't happy with that. So that lends to the story of whatever happened, we'll never know. But whatever happened, I know she was a part of it. I know she was a part of it. Because, and that was why, if you recall, when he first called me, he told me the truth. He said, there's been an accident. Shirley has hit her head. And she's passed on. It was later, and I believe this was because somebody had said to him, what are you saying? He now switched the story, and it now became that Shirley was ill and had gone to the hospital. And we tracked the hospital records. There was even somebody who was willing to tell us what had happened, really, after they brought her in. After one email or two on Facebook, the person just blanked me because clearly they had gotten to the person. Because here is the thing we didn't realize was that those people, they're very into their own. Even if they know something is wrong, if it's a Polish person versus an African person, they're going to protect
that
person. They won't talk.
Yeah.
They won't talk. So we had many, at least three instances of people wanting to say something, and then eventually they would be radio silence. You know, so we knew, I just knew that, okay, you know what? This thing is bigger than I can deal with. I mean, I'm in Nigeria here. I can't go there. My family was not supportive of me going there because they didn't feel it was safe because I wanted to just rush Poland and just do anything, you know. But I didn't have that support. But I guess at the end of the day, it was in my best interest because I could have been hurt. Because we did find out that that this is something that had been happening. And that's why I hope we're going to get into this show, we're going to get to the things I think people need to do or people need to know if you're in a relationship with anybody from that area. Here is what, how you, I'm not saying don't fall in love. Please, love is a beautiful thing. But as an African woman and even a guy, you never can tell. But there's clearly like a cartel or something that happens in those places where these guys marry our girls. And it's a long-term plan for long, 6-7 years worth of marriages and everything. And then, guess what they do? They take out insurance or take out a mortgage or do something in the name of that person. And the next thing you know, the lady has turned up dead. These are things I found out later. These are things I found out. And it made sense because just the August before this December, Shirley had told me that they've taken out a mortgage because, you know, I said that they're going to build their own home, you know, on the same land where the mom's home was, but they were going to build their own home, at least have their own space. The August and that same period, after they'd been married for, I think they got married in 2009, August 2016, that was when Shirley's final name change came to pass. That was when she officially became Shola Gaska.
Mm.
And that, okay. Once you do that, boom. The guy has every right over you. He can do whatever he wants.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
So, I mean, look at the timeline. I mean, who would blame me or any member of my family or anybody who hears this who will blame us for saying, no, something fishy clearly was going on here. This was not just a natural death, like they were trying to make us think that, oh, she had some tumor in her head, she was this. I'm like, come on, please. And if there was, and again, if this was even true, then my sister would have told me that, look, Egbon, this was happening. Like she told me she had taken an insurance for the house. Like she told me she had changed her name. If she was having any kind of health issues like that, she would have told me. You know? If she wanted to be cremated, she would have told me. You know? So nobody can tell me that nothing untoward, didn't happen. But I had to leave it. I had to leave it to God and begin my own healing journey for my sake, for my sake, for the sake of my own family, you know. But there's things that we all need to know, you know, when you live, and I don't think it's just the European part of the world. I think generally,
it's all over the world.
To a marriage or a relationship with anybody who just is not African and doesn't understand our culture, then there's just some things, you know, you guys need to sit down and iron out, you know. And I'm happy to share, because I was prepared to at least the four key things that anybody who is dating, you know, a foreigner, any woman or any girl, if you're dating somebody who is not African, who is not Nigerian, here are the things that you need to know. I don't know if you have any questions before I go into that.
Go ahead.
Let me ask you a quick question, okay? And that is where I'm coming in. Don't you think personally, I mean, this has always been a question I've always wanted to ask. Don't you feel that maybe if Shola had kind of had a relationship with other Nigerians, you understand? Yeah. Because sometimes we tend to always want to put ourselves in a cocoon, especially when you are in diaspora. One of the things that some of us do, and I know I've been a victim of it before I started reaching out, is you say to yourself, okay, you know what? I don't want to mix with other Nigerians because I don't want to get into trouble. Yes, I do understand. But you can actually mix with Nigerians and actually put a boundary. There's some things you would not do. And this is because, I mean, God forbid, if anything happens, you know, the Nigerians can either alert you, they can give you tips on what to do. So do you think that was a factor? Maybe if she had moved with some, because she wasn't the only Nigerian living there. What do you think?
No, I agree with you. So I think there's two sides to it. So there's the side that says definitely that would have helped. So when Shirley lived in Krakow, she had closer connections with the Nigerians in Krakow. And I think they even had an association, because at some point we tried to go through them to get help. So, but the moment she moved into this little town on the outskirts of I don't know where, Krakow, she was the only African in that space. And then it was difficult to stay in touch with anybody, even though she tried, because later on people came up and were like, oh yeah, we know Shirley, you know, she was even a member of the fellowship and all of that, but she was so far away. So they had to always plan connections. So she was kind of like insulated, which didn't work in her favor. You know, but then on the other hand, the few Nigerians and co that I found out that she met, one or two of them tried to be helpful at the beginning, but for some reason later on they just stepped back, and I couldn't understand it. But then on one hand I couldn't understand it, on the other hand I was like, you know what, the wahala was getting very plenty, and they still lived there. So I guess they had to realize that, you know what, we still live here, we don't know where this matter is going. Let's just stand back.
Let's step back.
Let's step back. You know, and I actually had I found a guy. He's Nigerian. He'd been in Poland for like ages. If I think he even had a political position. That's how entrenched he was in that culture. And he said to me, my sister, let me tell you, this matter, nothing will come out of it. Just leave it. Say you're a Christian. Just leave it to God.
Like, wow.
To my face, he said, look, I know these people. Nothing will come out of this matter because your sister is an African. So just leave it. And then on top of that, the same, and it's to what you said, sometimes, you know, Nigerian, the Nigerian, African, whatever, you don't even know who is for you, who is against you. In this same whole story that we were telling, we're going round and round, there was a girl who came up. At first, she was trying to be very helpful and telling us things. But then it turned out people now sending messages warning me that, no, that this girl, please, that she was trying to be involved with your sister's husband. Don't trust her. Don't trust her. You know? And then she told one story at first. And then she now told a different story that, oh, no, she wasn't in the hospital. So this is what happened. She had come to me to say, look, she was there. When Shirley fell, she was there. And they took her to the hospital. They rushed her to the hospital. And that's as much she knew. But somebody else came and now said, oh, no, that's not the story, that she's lying. That she there was a fight, an altercation between her, Shirley, and this guy. And that was what happened. That was the accident the husband was referring to. But those two bits of information I got from one from her version of the truth, and another from another girl, a different version of the truth. And here I am in Nigeria. What do I do? And then trying to figure out, look at you, this is what you said, but somebody else says this, and boom, she disappears from Facebook. Till today, I've not heard from her again. I can't even remember her name.
She's a Nigerian.
Nigerian. And like, then quite like the daughter of some diplomat or something. So very well known. She disappeared from the face of Facebook. I never found her again. And even the person who was trying to push me and say, look, this is, you need to investigate this. This, something is not right here. That person too, radio silence. And you know, this is me. It's just me. You know, my whole family was on my back saying every time, Roshalai, how far? This Shola's matter, how far? It was getting to me. And I just realized that, no, it's not going to work. There's no point doing this. And I think that was when I began to lean into what God was saying, that, look, you know what? Leave this matter to me. You know, I am big enough. I am big enough. I see and I know everything. And he assured me at some point, because when I was like, yeah, leave it. But you mean I'm never going to know what happened to my sister? And he has assured me that, look, when you're ready, I will let you know. But in the meantime, here and here are the things I want you to do. And that's what we started. We started doing the work with Shirley's foundation. So you're right. It would have been good if Shirley was maybe more entrenched in the whole Nigeria Association or whatever. Maybe they would have been more inclined to fight for her justice and whatever, but she wasn't. But I don't know. So even if you were, if they feel that it's going to impact them negatively, you don't know who is who. You don't know how invested they're going to be in you. But simple response to your question, I think wherever we are, if there's an association of Nigerians, whatever, it still pays. It serves you. I would err on the side of being active in that association, to be honest, if you're out there. I would err on the side of that, because it will help you. You need that network on your behalf. Because if we had had that in a stronger way, maybe I would have had more legs on ground to help me. You know.
There's a question that's been burning to ask you. Is there a Nigerian like a Nigerian representative in Poland? Because I know you said from the Nigerian side there was really nothing you could do. I mean, knowing our people and the things they do, but I believe you were pushing it from Nigeria. Mm-hmm. Now, in Poland, isn't there a representative of the Nigerian government that you could have gone to, maybe the High Commission or anything?
Yeah, spot on. You know, that's why that is the part that I think upsets me the most, because you're right, there was. And we were in touch with him even before Shirley's cremation. We were in touch with him. I was on my knees on the phone begging him to do anything he could to stop this guy, you know. And he I think at some point it was like they were very like blasé about it. You know, when you've seen something happen too many times and you don't really just care. He wasn't invested in it because Kai, he doesn't know this girl, whatever. So he didn't take it personally. So yeah, they said they went to the police to say, look, something's what's going to happen. Please come and help us to go and stop this guy from doing that. And the police were looking at him, okay, what right do you have? Are you a relative to the lady? Are you? So he tried his best at the end of the day, but it really just wasn't enough. If this was a high-profile person's daughter, I think they would have done much more than they did. So we were fighting it on both sides, you know, on ground in Poland, here in Nigeria, through the Federal Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And we had a lot of people around us who were trying to help us. But at a point, even Dr. Obi Ekwesili, she got involved. Yeah. She's one of my sisters. Yeah, she got involved. She even booked an appointment for us to come to go to Abuja and see the Polish ambassador. But you could see that it was all just, even in the moment, we sat in front of the guys, I could see the guy's face, the two gentlemen in the Polish embassy. I knew that it was going to be a waste of time. The moment brought out, because my husband sent a picture of her in the mortuary, with her face had been made up. Shola never wore all up under her neck. It's clearly hiding something. The guy just looked at the picture and was like, you know, we can't get involved. You have to go to Poland. Okay, you have to go to Poland, but are you going to give me an emergency visa? Oh, no, you have to go through the process. I just stick in the box here. I'm not going to do this anymore with them. Let me go home and try and sort out my life. And, yeah, eventually that's what I did. And I'm so grateful to God that he started that healing process with me. October 2018 was when I finally just handed off, stepped back. Or maybe before then. I think that October 2018 was when I began the process of releasing him and his parents, because I was burning up with so much
rage,
rage and resentment, and I just wanted him to drop dead and die. It was him, plus his mom, plus his sisters. That was where I was. It was affecting my life, because you can't be in that kind of a place. It's to begin to seep into other areas of your life, and when you are in that place where you're holding so much against a particular group of people, you realize you begin to hold the same vex about against people who are even in your own circle on this side, who have nothing to do with that, but you are just a whole ball of anger and bitterness, and that begins to taint other parts of your life. And I couldn't stand.
You can even become paranoid.
Exactly, you know. And also, I started that process then, October 2018, and that's where I've been on until now, just releasing him to the point now, even though I've spoken about this with so much kind of like, I can feel myself feeling the same way I felt back then, but I am not in that place where I want to curse him, or I want him to die, or I want his parent mother to die, or his sister to die. I'm not in that space. You know, I'm actually still in the space where I just say, you know what, I wish you guys well. All I know is that my God is a God of justice, and you know, people reap what they sow. So if your hands are clean, fine, but if your hands are not clean, then you're going to meet it in front. You know, that's kind of like where I am now with them. But you know, because we got journalists to investigate, investigative journalists. They actually traced him, went to his home. The mother wouldn't let them in. She said she didn't know where her son was, that he has gone, she's gone somewhere, she doesn't know. So the journalist said to us that she asked the mom that, don't you want your son to defend himself and clear his name? At least say something. No. The mom didn't answer. She said she doesn't know where he is. He has gone. So basically pretending that he has gone AWOL. That was then. So at that point, the journalist said, look, all you can do is go through the courts, or you just leave this matter alone, because even the villagers and co, all they can keep saying, oh, Shirley was such a beautiful girl, she was so nice, but okay, what happened to her? Nothing. They won't speak. But she said she could tell from their faces that they knew that it was not ordinary. Everybody she spoke to in that small village, she said she could tell that they knew something was wrong, but they just would not speak, because this was an African. They're not going to give up their own.
Yeah. Wow. Are you still in touch with the family now? Or, I mean, do you get in touch with anybody there? No, it's closed.
I only knew the husband, his mom, and his two sisters, and of course, you know, the sisters, husbands, and stuff. I only met them, three or four days that I was there for Shirley's wedding, and that's it. I've not spoken to any member of that family since, I think, the last or so days of December or early in January, when this gentleman told me that he was going to, but nothing anybody could do about it. You know, that is the last time I've spoken to him. I've messaged him since then saying, okay, look, you've done what you want. No problem. It is well. Please put my sister's property. You can take what you want, but every other thing that belongs to her, put them in a box for me. I will pay, ship them to so-and-so address for me. I will organize to come and pick them up. Do you know what this guy told me? In one sentence, I have nothing to send. Of all my sisters, she got to Poland in 2000. From 2000 to 2016, you say you have nothing of hers to give me. In one sentence, that was when I just blocked him. I said, clearly this gentleman is not well. Let me not take myself down this rabbit hole with him. And that's the last communication I've ever had with him. And that was sometime maybe, I don't know, late 2017 or early 2018. He said, I have nothing to send. Can you imagine?
of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
Yeah, I said it's it's breathtaking.
Yeah,
it's actually breathtaking when you hear things like this. But like Bola said, it's sad. It's sad, and that is why I use the word is eye opening for we in the diaspora, because you see, like you rightly said, which is going to take us through about we being able to guard yourself when you're in the diaspora. But I've had a similar story like this, but it was unfortunately was the other way around. There was a Nigerian man married to a South African girl, and then they came to Nigeria for holiday. Unfortunately, they had an accident, and the lady died with a son. Do you realize that before the guy could come back to South Africa, they had burnt down his old house?
What?
Mm.
Yes.
Wow.
They burnt everything to pieces. As in, he just decided that, you know what, don't let me bother coming back to South Africa. Because somebody was nice enough to inform him that don't even bother coming back because they will kill you.
Makes sense.
Wow.
Yeah, somebody was nice enough to inform him that don't bother coming back, and then sent him a photo of his house that burnt everything to ashes. So, I mean, it just takes us back to what Bola said. How do we go about those things? Tell us from your own experience.
Okay, so...
What advice do you do to my...
So, yeah. It's more for anyone who's married to somebody from that side of the world or in a relationship with them. And here, it comes from what I wish I had with what I wish my sister had, and what I wish I had with my sister. Maybe if she had known that, she would have slowed down the process to change her name, no matter what the reason, or at least she would have gone in with her eyes open, and she would have taken some precaution. So please, ladies, do your research and figure out, okay, this guy I'm married to, what does the law give him? What are his rights over me as my husband? And just know where you stand, you know, where it's about money or whatever. No, the agreements I would love for you to have with your husband is, okay, if I'm sick, who on my side of the family must be aware? Even if I can't talk or whatever, we're going to sign this paper here today, so-and-so person, you must call the person and tell them I'm not feeling well. Have an agreement that says, If something happens to me, so-and-so person, you must call the person within so-and-so many hours that I'm hospitalized. Have an agreement that says, if we take out any life insurance or any mortgage and it is in my name, so-and-so person on my side of the family must be aware. What is the agreement about? What is the insurance amount? Have all those details. Have an agreement that between you and him, if he's not funny, if he has no evil intentions, it shouldn't be a problem, you know, for somebody in your family to know all these things about you. Please have an agreement ahead of now, or before you marry him, or now, today. If we have children, see, guys, just try to imagine what would have happened if Shirley had children with this guy, where I would be right now. Where my family would be right now. If he couldn't even send me her clothes and her books and her stuff, is it the children I would have access to? Please, ladies, have an agreement with your husband today that, darling, please, if I die, so-and-so people in my family must have access to my children. Let it be written in this agreement. Have a lawyer look at it and sign it between both of you. It's okay if you love the guy. You're not saying he's funny. You're not saying you're just doing something to safeguard you and to make sure that you have a voice in the room, God forbid, if something happens to you and you die. Number three, please, if you've married in the diaspora, you got there to Poland or wherever, Canada, you found a guy, when COVID allows you, start bringing these people home. Let them come and see that you did not drop from the sky, that you have people. These people got away with this thing because they met Shola as just Shola. Even when I went for her marriage, that the mother-in-law and the sisters were saying to her in Poland, and she was telling me that they were like, oh, you mean you have a sister like this? Wow. They were seeing her as some jangala girl that just dropped from nowhere, you know? And they were telling her, oh, Shirley, what happened to you? Your sister is so refined. She's so cultured. And she would be laughing because she was such a naive person.
Yeah.
For faith to love you.
She was just playing.
She was in love and she was protected. So to her face, they didn't believe that she had a family. You know, and I even just thank God that my father passed before all this happened, because how would I have even taken care of my father in all of this strangeness, you know, that was going on? So please, dear sisters, if you are married to people, you have not brought your husband home to see where you come from, please correct that. It's error. You are living in error. Better still, if you have not married him yet, make sure he knows that you come from somewhere. Bring him home. Let him come and experience your culture. Let him see where you come from. So that even when you people go back to Africa, before he tries anything funny, at least something in the sensible part of his brain will say, these people, they will come after me. This person has people behind her. I can't just get away with doing anything to her. Somebody will definitely come after me.
I just hope, like you rightly said, I hope people would learn, and I hope it's as easy as you are saying. One of the things I personally think in all the outlines you've given is, you know, people, like you rightly said, people get into the diaspora for different reasons. But I think the most important thing for me in diaspora, which you have touched in a different light, is letting whoever you are with know that, you know what, I've got people around me.
Yeah.
That can come to me, to my aid, or whatever is happening at any point in time. Because you see, when you are in isolation, it's easier for you to be a victim.
Yep.
But when there's a sense of, okay, you know what, this person has protection, because like the Nigerian man that it happened to, one of the reasons they couldn't really go and do so much damage to him, mm-hmm. and some of his things were a little bit saved, was the fact that you know what, he has a strong Nigerian connection.
Yeah.
You know, in you know, this attitude of my brother, my sister, we're always brothers and sisters in all over the place. So, you know, even though they were not related, there was this brother and sister that could always warn him on time. But you see, for me, what caused it more for me when I went through Shola's journey and I looked at everything then was just the like you rightly said, the attitude. I think because the Nigerian government was not, let's turn the case around. You think something like that could have happened in Nigeria?
Never.
And there won't be
meltdown. You just took the words out of my mouth, because that was what we always used to say. Imagine if it was a Nigerian guy who something had happened to his Polish wife in Nigeria. The Polish people would have rushed that guy, like, before he would know what was happening, he would probably be in detention somewhere before the Nigerian people would be able to come and save him and say, okay, what's going on here? It would never happen.
Look, I'm telling you that this Nigerian guy was made to send the body of the lady.
Yeah.
They were going to lure him to tell him to come with the body, but at least somebody was wise enough to advise him. I mean, and the person was in South Africa. I don't even bother coming, because they're going to deal with you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but it was made to pay to send the body back to South Africa.
I think
you understand.
Go ahead. I think it's like what you said. I think from the very beginning you had said it. You know, I think the biggest part of my disappointment was in my own government, you know, because, also where I felt the most helpless, because I knew that if even the Nigerian, you know, the Nigeria Attorney of the Federation had just shown slight interest in this matter, things would have gone differently. Because that was all even if the Polish guys were doing, you know, eye service, whatever, but the guy, the lawyer in the court there assured me that, look, once we get the original documentation from your government, we will investigate. We'll go to the hospital. They may have fixed everything, you know, done, worked up all the, at least, but they were going to do something.
But you can't do it on an individual ground.
They couldn't. And I did my best, you know, but he said, look, you've done very well. I can see you really want to fight for your sister in this thing, but this, we cannot go based on your own documentation. We need the original set from your government. And I sent the original set to them. I never heard anything. I mean, and people tried to help, you know, people from my church tried to help through the vice president and all of that. Well, I guess, you know, I don't know what's important to our government now. I think maybe they've seen these cases over and over. They don't care. One of the individuals from the government was like, you know, these stories are everywhere. I'm like, but that's your job. You're supposed to be going in there to make sure this doesn't happen. So what are you doing, you know? And instead of telling me that, why did me and my family let my sister go in there? That's not the point. The point is, this has happened. Help us, you know? But it is what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is. It is. It is what it is. All right. You see that I've been very quiet, you know, because we started with you and I having some things in common. And I see that telling your story, you know, I have my own story to tell. And what one of the things that is striking, you know, here is that when tragedy happens, okay, you are not able to mourn, you are not able to grieve immediately because there's a cause you are fighting, you know, and that delays your in quote mourning period, you know, which is absolutely something that I've gone through with myself. And until years after, or maybe months after, when you've as you also did dropped the case, then you can begin to move on and you can begin to see, you
absolutely
know, that or begin that healing process. Unfortunately, we don't have time.
Absolutely, because you nailed it. You're so right.
The way it has happened now, we've dwelt more. I like it though. We've dwelt more on Nigerians in diaspora, the kind of things that can happen to them, what they should do. Even though at the beginning I thought we were going to be doing more of the trauma bit and how to get over it and the process of healing, but this has been perfectly suited towards, you know, what this radio station stands for, really, you know, which is basically to enlighten and educate Nigerians in diaspora on how to cope with living outside of their country. I'm sure there will be a part two to this, Lola, from what I see. Maybe at that point in time, some of us can also share, you know, our own, you know, experience, you know, when it comes to grieving and you are fighting a cause. You can't grieve. You can't even see anybody, man, because you are looking at the battle. You are looking at the battle. You are so resolute. I must get to the end
you
of
can.
This.
You can't. You're grieving. You're fighting people.
Yes. You know. Well, I guess time never allows us more than 60 minutes on this show. Lola, your last word, then we can take Salt's last word, and then maybe we'll do a part two of this, because the way it has gone, it's just one side, you know, one half of the story.
Well, like I said, I just felt, because we're a diaspora-based radio station, I knew that bringing on Salt would wrap up so many things, because the things we do not look at in diaspora. Diaspora, we always look at all the other sides, but when tragedy strikes, sometimes we're caught, it's like being in a crossfire. We're caught in between, that you don't even know what you are fighting anymore. You don't know if you're dealing with the trauma, you don't know if you're dealing with hurt, you don't know if you're dealing with so many things, so many forces, that sometimes you just even get lost in it. So I'm hoping that with this, and if we can do a part two sometime, we will be able to like help more people in diaspora on how to deal with.
I think the key thing to dealing with this kind of trauma is to first of all allow yourself, give yourself the grace to know that you are going through pain, and you know, embrace the pain. You can't shut it down. You have to eventually embrace the pain. And then for me personally, it's just allowing God to just help you through it, and just know that it's a journey, because there's so many different emotions you're going to go through, the anger, the regret, grief, all of that, before you get to acceptance and all the way around. But I think the chief thing for me in terms of my healing was just the forgiveness. I couldn't start healing until I really had forgiven my sister's husband.
That's a story for another day. That forgiveness is not easy. Yeah. Not easy.
It's not easy. It's not easy at all. But I feel like if I didn't forgive them, then he was stealing from me all over again.
I agree with you absolutely.
He was actually
all right. I think a real talk with Lola today
wasn't
making
him right or anything.
Okay. I hear you loud and clear, and I agree with you.
But thank you guys for having me, and I hope in some way we'll
Yes, certainly, certainly. Don't worry. What I also promise is that I'll make sure that we get this tape to a few areas, even though it might not be able to do much about the case, but let's bring it again to their attention that these are some of the things that we expect them to be doing. I'm sure this tape is going to get to one or two places, and we'll bring
network
it again.
Is dropping.
Yeah. I'm just promising that this tape will get to one or two places.
Of course, I know this is going to go a little bit.
We'll make sure we send this tape to one or two places. And look, it might not be about Shola's case, but I mean all of the other cases, and then we'd have done our job as human beings or whatever.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you very much. Real talk.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Comes
so
back
much.
Next week, 6 p.m. Nigeria time at the same station. Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
Thank you.
Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.